So, for example, we talked about Miles Turner a couple of times. If Luka wants a lob threat, that probably kills that, doesn't it? You know? Are we making a trade for Daniel Gafford? And I agree, he's not an A-list center. There are a lot of guys out there like him that Luka could make look a tier better than they actually are, but that's not what Luka's looking for. He's like, I want somebody to make my life easier too. And in this instance, I don't think it's wrong. Like, if you look at I don't think it's just Luka looking at things through what's best for him. I agree that it's what's best for the team as well. You look at the conference finalists, every single team had a premium high level five guy that Lakers need to get that. And so
how many times have we made that point? Bro, away from here. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is far and away, I felt my anxiety go up even when you were asking me that question. This is easily the thing that I'm most nervous about over the course of the summer.
Yeah. That it's, I think, going to define this summer, and maybe you could say, all right, not to continue to beat a dead horse here, but maybe you bring in a Stewart and you say, hopefully a center comes available over the course of the season. Right. But
we just talked about this in the first part of this.
You can't
come out of this summer and be like, hopefully Trump, this was the summer that shit was supposed to shake free. Right. And so it needs, right. I'm not trying to doom and gloom, but I'm just saying that no, that's not going to fly. You can't come, you can't be July 15th. And that's what you're telling Luka.
Right. And that's exactly where I'm at if Rob Pelinka sits there in his post off season presser or his pre-season presser and tries to tell anybody, we can't buy a house that wasn't for sale. Told us the real estate market was going to be great. You told us about the real estate market in the summer of 26 and you planned everything and you, for lack of a better term, wasted other real estate cycles to get to the summer of 26. So you those excuses, those explanations and whatever area in between there, those two words you want to use, those aren't going to fly. And they specifically aren't going to fly with Luka, somebody who, by the way, he signed his extension. He's going to be a Laker longer term, but he's a year or so away from those conversations popping back up again.
He's a free agent at 28. We've got him for 2 years guaranteed and that's it.
Right. And so, this summer is absolutely critical. I keep going back to the Walker Kessler thing, and this is a conversation that I believe has happened already between the Lakers and Utah, where it's like, look, we could sign him to an offer sheet that fucks up both of our books. Neither of us would be happy to get him at the number that we would have to sign him to really make you think about it. His agent isn't thrilled with him continuing to be in Utah. Let's try to find a way that maybe neither of us walk away from this room feeling particularly happy about how things transpired, but maybe that's a path that some kind of a sign and trade. And yes, it hard caps the Lakers at the first apron. Yes, it would kind of complicate things as they try to build out the rest of their roster and re-sign guys that they have currently on their roster. But that's the scenario I'm probably focused the most on is some kind of a sign and trade there with Kessler, who, by the way, again, is kind of a theoretical A-lister,
I like him. I've been watching tape on him a lot over the last week.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah, I think he's I understand. And even the five games thing, how many games did they sit players out last year?
Yeah.
How many games could he have played on a real team? He tore his labrum,
that's the only thing is that he got a surgery that very quickly eliminated him from the season that maybe other teams would have been let's see what other options that we have available to us. Whereas the Jazz were shoot, which is part of why he and his camp have had the friction that they have had with Utah, right? He wanted to be physically available and he wanted to go to Indiana and he wanted to be on a team that he felt values him more than, say, Utah has. And that's kind of the starting point of all of this. And so
also a lot of these guys, Matt, they're way more competitive than we give them credit for. We talk a lot about their contracts and how they want opportunity and things like that. But Walker Kessler is played pretty much his entire career for a team that's trying to lose on purpose. If you've got any competitive spirit at all, that fucking sucks. And to do that, and he's been a good soldier about it the whole time. And now they want to fuck with his money. Oh, well, you only played 5 games last year. It's like, motherfucker, that you wanted guys sitting out. You know what I mean? Like, I could see how that would get really old, and you would want to be like, no, I want to actually play real basketball for a team that wants to win. And I don't appreciate that. Like, I've been a good soldier, and now you're trying to use that against me and be like, oh, well, you deserve this number instead of that number.
What did you make of the 4-year or the 5-year, $140 million contract that I think it was Tim McMahon reported is sitting on the table already? What did you make of that one? Because I had kind of a funny response to it.
I thought it was a little low. I expected him to get a number in the low 30s. And if I remember correctly, it was like 28 per year. And so, yeah, I thought that was a little bit low.
I think that's the kind of thing that a team leaks out there to be like, and the nut, like it being framed around the total amount of money and not the average earning per year. Was I thought really telling here, where that felt very much like the Angels being like, look, man, we offered him $140 million.
And that's what they do. Yeah. Danny Ainge, and I'm sure Austin Ainge is just the same. They've always used the media to like to play hardball with their own guys. Like, that's a cutthroat couple of dudes right there that does not care at all about their player. They're gonna fuck with Keontae George, who had a great year this year too. And and they've always used the media, and who are more than happy to carry water for them.
Would you, if you were the Lakers, go to Walker and be like, hey, that $140 million, how would you be interested in that over 4 years instead of five? Or would that be too high for you?
It's both high for me, but it's also like basic economics, supply and demand. The conversation we just had about who the good fives are, like I would be really happy with Walker Kessler or Jalen Duren. I would be happy with Jared Allen. I don't think Duren or Allen are available. There are other guys that I'd be happy with, but it's like that guy's a backup or that guy's not quite at that level. And so I don't see a ton of options at the five. And maybe that's just lack of imagination on my part and Lakers trade for somebody else that we haven't even talked about. It's possible, right? But like of the dudes available, like it's both high and also possibly necessary to be able to do that, because I just don't think there are other guys of that caliber actually available.
If you do that, you then, I believe, have to renounce LeBron and Rui for the first couple of days of free agency while that offer sheet sits there and you have 48 hours that you know Utah is going to use every minute of.
So I think your point, though, about like it being way likelier of a sign and trade. I don't think we would sign Kessler to an offer sheet and get him strictly off
and not know. Sheet.
Right. And not know. You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah. And plus at that point, like most of free agency is done at that point. Most of the offseason transactions are done at that point. So I think that's sort of the leverage Utah has of like, no, it'd have to be a sign and trade that if you wanted to do something like that. So I think they would have to agree to that rather than I hope we sign him to an offer sheet and Utah doesn't match.
Yeah, it's part of why I thought some of Dave's reporting about like LeBron coming in at a number in the 20s and Rui maybe being the odd man out was kind of telling, because that does then make the room, like maintain the room. Like if you do that, if you sign LeBron to a deal, let's say at 20, just to keep things at a nice round number, that brings, you know, that removes his cap hold, brings his cap allocation down to 20 from the 60 or whatever it currently sits at. So that gives you some flexibility there. Then if you renounce Rui and say, good luck going out and getting a better offer, you know, then that removes another, what is it, $24, $25 million of cap allocation there. We're supposed to get a decision on player options in the next 10 days or so from DeAndre Ayton and Marcus Smart. We know what Austin's decision is going to be. So like we can just kind of take that for granted. And I think there, like that opens up enough space to, you know, sign and trade Walker to a reasonable enough salary, right? I don't think it would cost the full 35 in this case if it's a sign and trade. And then I think that keeps you, depending on the number that Austin signs at, far enough below the first apron that you can actually have a feasible rest of your offseason and feasible rest of your year without it being the headache that it has been in the last few years. If that was kind of like the beginning of the offseason, how would you feel about it?
I'd feel good about that, right? Like, you're not going to get a better player than LeBron James at $20 million. And one of the things about this offseason that I think the Lakers prioritized was replacing LeBron, not in a literal, like, this is the new star power forward that is in that spot, but just from a, we've got good players under this number, that if he's in that $15 to $20 million range, that's what the MLE is going to be. So if LeBron retires after next year, you can still replace at least the salary slot. And I would love to have an upgrade, you know, to Kessler, from Ayton to Kessler. I also, like, we talked about this yesterday on the pod, me and Darius, and like, do you believe in the Luka, LeBron, Austin trio? Like, do you think they can get to, say it's Kessler, and take your pick, that they're able to get some wing in that moves Marcus to the bench, or at least duplicates him? Like, I don't know, man. We just watched the playoffs, and I think back to like the OG tip in game 4, and OG kind of soared above Stephon Castle, who was way up in the air, Devin Vassell, who was way up in the air. I'm like, none of our perimeter players can get to that ball. Seriously. And between that and just the level of speed at the highest levels, and the OKC series of just, I like all of our players and that trio, right? That's obviously a super skilled trio. I love me some Marcus Smart. He's always been one of my favorites. But when you add them up collectively, throw Kessler in there, who's got a great motor, but like, that's a kind of slow, unathletic team that I know that we don't have to run the race that everybody else is running necessarily, but we do have to at least keep up that. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in that trio's ability to, if you pick whoever you want on the other two spots in the closing five, that they can get there?
This is one of those things where, like you just talked about with Kessler, where it's like, there just aren't very many options beyond that, right? Like, I wish the Lakers could be more athletic. Yeah, I like the Lakers explicitly stated that they would like to be more athletic, but I also want them to be the best basketball team that they can realistically and feasibly be. And I just don't see a whole bunch of athleticism and creativity. Like, we just talked about the Detroit Pistons, right? They are plenty athletic. Mm-hmm. They have athleticism oozing out the wazoo, but they were a quick exit because they didn't have the creativity,
the skill
necessary to get them there, you know? Yeah. And so, like, you either trade one for the other here. And I don't think, all right, here's how I'll put it. I don't think there's an athlete at $20-ish million a year who is athletic enough to make me feel better about losing LeBron's creativity if the Lakers need it.
We're not going to get a better player than LeBron James at $20 million. Right.
Yeah. And I guess more directly to answer your question, I actually really do believe in that trio based on what we saw from them in that final month when LeBron said, you know what? All right, Luka, Austin, y'all got you guys can operate on the ball. I'll handle the dive on the floor, take the charge, play the defense shit over here. Mm-hmm. And do I love relying on a 43-year-old to do that next year? Like, I'm not over the moon about it, but I just don't see very many alternatives, especially if you're turning down LeBron in the 20s. I said this on the show yesterday. I don't see how you get better as a basketball team when LeBron at $20 million is potentially on the table and you say, nah, we're good.
Would you rather have LeBron for 1 year at 20 than Rui for 3 in the mid to high teens?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, because I like Rui. I really respect the growth that he has had as a Laker, right? Like, turning himself into an absolute laser and all of that stuff. The thing that I worry about with Rui, I don't like players that you have to hold their hands to the extent that the Lakers have to hold his hand up there. where it's like, nope, you go stand here. You shoot if it's this. You dribble if it's this. Yep. You defend by standing here. You and like, I don't trust his basketball IQ enough to have him be a cornerstone of a playoff team to the extent that he would have to be if you're choosing between him and LeBron.
That's fair. That's fair.
Let's talk about confidence with everything that we've kind of talked about here. How confident are you that the Lakers are going to be able to pull any or all of this off?
Let me go in a more optimistic direction here, because I've been a little more dour. I do think that this front office is very much built for a summer of optionality. Whether it was Kobe or when he was an assistant for Magic, and even into his tenure beyond as the Lakers president of basketball operations, one of the things that has always stood out about Plink is that if you go to him and say, hey, we want to accomplish this, he'll come back to you with five different scenarios of this is how we can accomplish that. And so between that and since they've targeted this offseason for so long, so much of the work on this is intel gathering, right? Like, is Kessler available? What is the situation there? What about this other guy that people like us, we can bullshit about it on a podcast, but it's an entirely different situation from like getting the intel. And since they planned on this all along, they better have been doing this work all along. And I trust them to have been doing that. And so between that, and I thought they were very creative last offseason in building kind of the best team that they could. Like, I don't start from a place of, you know, Plink and his people are dumb and they don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't believe that at all. So I do think that they work their best when they have a long time to plan something and they can sort of set up the pieces and knock them down. And I think that is exactly is this. But between the center spot and just sort of what the hell does Plink believe in the first place? And do they have these blind spots to, they want to shoot and, you know, they thought the Kennard trade was proof of concept and they sort of want to build more guys like that. Are they going to put enough athletes on the floor to be able to compete with OKC and San Antonio, or at least keep up, right, with those type of teams? That's where my nervousness comes in. But I do have some degree of confidence that you give this group of people that long to formulate a plan and execute on it, they're going to do a pretty good job of it. Where are you at on that?
I obviously wish I was more confident.
Yeah, me too.
I wish I and this is part of why last year's trade deadline kind of annoyed me, where it's like they put so much into the basket of this offseason that it's just so difficult to just completely build a roster that is good enough to like compete at the level that Luka Doncic and LeBron James and Austin Reeves and Lakers fans demand that it competes at. And with everything that they have to accomplish here, right? Like, the center spot is obviously the first and foremost thing, but I don't like only having Marcus Smart as point of attack defense.
Right.
I don't love how slow they are on the wing, you know, and how many one-way players they still have. We look at the depth that like OKC and San Antonio and these teams have, to where like, you know, they're like 10th and 11th guys would be significant rotation players for the Lakers. I would like, you know, like how, you know, the Lakers haven't drafted well enough to do that, you know, and that's another thing that, you know, this upcoming draft is a critical one as well. There are actually some center prospects who are currently mocked to the Lakers, and I find that kind of interesting as a possibility there too.
When you were talking about the stretch five option, perhaps in the Lakers center rotation, I was thinking that could be the 25th pick as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm contrary to kind of my rap in this corner here. I'm not like completely doom and gloom, but I guess what I'm optimistic about is that, like, if Mark Walter is paying attention to the extent that we know that he is paying attention to this offseason, not just in terms of like the roster that the Lakers build, but also like the efforts to build out the infrastructure of the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's paying attention to all of this. And it hasn't gone swimmingly so far, right? They still haven't hired the assistant GM who's going to be in charge of the draft And I know people say, well, they hired the dude from Virginia whose name I'm blanking on.
Tony Bennett.
I was thinking Gene Autry, and I'm like, no, that's a different singer.
Different singer, yeah.
Yeah. but that was something that was explicitly leaked afterward. It was like, no, Tony Bennett is just a consultant. He's somebody that we like to identify, you know, tough wing talent and stuff like that, but he's not going to be the assistant GM that we told everybody that we're going to hire. So like my point is I am cautiously optimistic about the offseason that they're actually going to have, but I'm also really optimistic about the fact that if this doesn't go to in the direction that it needs to go and to the extent that it needs to go, then the people who are responsible for that kind of disappointment, yes, I think would face real accountability really quickly. And that's something that we've been begging for years. You know,
it's a win-win, bro. It's like either they knock this out of the park or they get their own people in there, right? Like, yeah. I do think that they like Palinka more than people realize. Like, I know Palinka gave a talk to the Dodgers invitation, right? To their people, right? And so I know they like him, but he's got to nail this. So he either does or we got new leadership.
Yep. Let's really quickly roll through some of the super comments that we have here before you have to get up out of here, starting with the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! Always. All right. Jay Cooper writes, I think the big thing here is here also is when Luca's asking for center, he didn't just say a center in the article. He was very specific. An A1 center, Mitchell Robinson, Time Lord are not A1, not even starters.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like that's kind of what we were kind of trying to get to is I would love to know what kind of center that Luca is specifically kind of talking about here. What caliber? We know what type of center, but,
Well, it seems he's explicit in that. I want an A1 caliber center. You can't get too deep into a list and call. Not everybody can be an A1 caliber guy, right? So he's asking for a fairly short list of players.
Yeah, but those guys aren't available. The league is smart and like the league is wisened up to the value of centers again, where they can create you possessions, they can limit the other team's possessions, they can score, they can they defend some of the most important shots on the court. Like everybody has now kind of dissipated from the center schmenter kind of talk.
They're the running Lakers backs of the NBA. Yeah, not anymore.
Nope. Let's see here. Greenlight Transport 8320, sign and trade Reeves for Duran, get Dort at shooting guard, get Grimes and Tybalt for the bench, sign SL Luca. Starting lineup would be Luca, Dort, Smart / Rui, LeBron, Duran, two creators and better defense. I don't think Detroit would do that for Reeves.
Mm-hmm,
they really, really like Duran. They really believe in him. They are of the opinion, based on what I'm hearing, that they think this postseason was an outlier from the type of postseasons he's going to have from here on out. What was really weird about this postseason with Duran was that he stopped being utilized as a secondary creator. Like, it was really weird. He was getting post touches over the course of the season and pinch post touches over the course of the season. And those just kind of completely went away. And I think that's something that Detroit would like to get back to. I think they see Duran a tier or two above where Reeves is at.
And they would also find themselves in a similar position to us in that if you were to trade Duran, you got to replace him. They'd need to have a good high end five that if they traded for Austin, they find themselves in that spot where it's like, is Beef Stew our starter now, you know, like while I see the vision though, from the like two jumbo creators and a bunch of defense around them, like that speaks to my question earlier of like, do you believe in this trio? Like, I like that type of build a lot better. I just don't think Duran's gettable.
No. I think Detroit has made their decision on Duran one way or another. Sylvester Dog writes, what's y'all's thoughts on the AD reunion rumors?
I'm
not going to lie. I put his name in the trade machine last night.
Did you?
It was a moment of weakness, Pete. I had a couple of glasses of wine. I regret it somewhat, but
I love AD. Man, if AD wasn't making $58 million next year
and expecting a big contract beyond that.
Right. Yeah. Like, that's all it is for me as a player. I think he'd be a great fit. I just think that it's a bigger version of the argument I was making earlier about Beef Stew, and that like if you allocate all those resources to that spot, you have nothing for anywhere else, right? And if you added AD to the team and then you wrote out what our roster would be and kind of what resources we would have left over, you'd see just a ton of holes. So between that and his injury issues, I would love it if there were any way you could get him for less. I would be all over that, but I don't see it.
A really, really, really funny conversation that is purely hypothetical that I would love to be a fly on the wall for would be Rob Pelinka telling LeBron, if you take the minimum, we can get Anthony Davis. Other than that, I don't see how that could possibly play out. He's just making too much money. And he's played barely more games than you and I have the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I don't want to completely disrespect Anthony Davis. No. I think I really, really respect and love Anthony Davis at his peak for the Lakers is legitimately one of my favorite players of all time. Like an absolute destroyer of worlds on both sides of the ball who honestly had a real claim to finals MVP, you know, and playoff MVP for the Lakers. Like if I knew I was getting 85% of that, sign me up. I would do it a zillion times out of 10. But there's so many question marks about this dude, and he makes so much money that if it doesn't work out, there is zero escape route. There is no other way around it. Let's see. I think we got a couple more here. Greenlight Transport, 8320. You can't run it back with Luka, AR, and LeBron. Three creators and no defense. LeBron sells tickets. AR will have to go and sign a trade for Kessler or Durant. Well, that's the thing. Part of this too, Pete, I don't think Austin, whatever number that he signs at, is going to be untradeable. So I would rather, you know, give it another go with these guys, see if what we saw in March was real. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't, then recalibrate closer to the deadline, you know, at a time where what Austin brings to the table is really valuable for many, many teams. It just so happens that the Lakers have too much of that right now, theoretically, according to this comment. And I understand it. I frankly don't even outright disagree with that.
Yeah, no, I share Greenlight's skepticism on that. Even if you do, I think that retaining the asset is still the move to make.
Yep. Let's see. All right. That is it. That is all right up against the right up against the finish line. Pete, thank you very much for hopping on and being flexible so that I could knock this out and watch Team USA a little bit later today. Let's Anything go. That you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Nah, just catch me and Darius over on the LFR pod and always love doing these, man. Thank you.
Thank you everybody for tuning in. That is going to do it for this week's episodes here in the lounge. Unless news breaks while I'm on the golf course tomorrow. Please don't do that to me. I'm not bringing my laptop. I will bring my little microphone so I can, you know, tweet a little offside video out or something if I need to. But have a great rest of your week, everybody. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. We will talk to you again on Sunday, hopefully. Maybe. We'll see.
Bye, everyone.